South Park Street by Michael Bailey. They say India is a great place to visit when you're young, but I didn't. I came here when I was older as part of my work. The city of Kolkata, or Calcutta as it was called by the British, is hot, crowded and noisy. My work has left me tired and overwhelmed by the sheer number of people all pressed together in overcrowded streets and crumbling city centre buildings. I've finished for the day and am walking along Park Street towards Park Circus. The smells of diesel exhaust, waxy jasmine flowers spilling over walls, ripe mangoes and something to do with the collapse of 200-year-old sewers combine to make me nauseous. Ahead, to my right, there's an old gateway, pinkish stone with pillars and black iron railings and gate. The black lettering says South Park Street Cemetery. This is just what I need, the peaceful company of people who've been dead 100 years or more. I buy a ticket at the kiosk and wander into the pathways between Victorian mausoleums and imposing graves. Barefoot women in bright coloured saris, heads down, sweep leaves and dust, their twig brooms moving with brisk swipes. I take my camera from my shoulder bag and start looking for pictures. The grave inscriptions are a sad testimony to the human cost of empire. One tablet tells part of the story of Elizabeth, who was once the most beautiful woman in Calcutta, married and died 2 years later. My guidebook fills in more of the details. She fooled numerous suitors into wearing ridiculous clothes to a ball and then married a well-connected man and had 2 children, all in 3 years from her arrival in India to her death. Her Indian-born English husband went on to remarry and father 10 more children with his second wife and 4 with a mistress. Others were not so fortunate or resistant to the multiple dangers of 18th century Calcutta. Henry died at 22, already a teacher, poet and patriot mentor to young Bengal. Children fared no better. Mary Ann departed this life February the 23rd, 1805, aged 11 months, 3 days. I'm getting deeper into the cemetery with every new grave. It's also getting darker. The gloom of dusk descending around me is filled with the black flitter of bats hunting for their breakfast. They swoop low, close to my face, weaving amongst the tumbling branches of flowers, growing between the crowded monuments. It's getting too dark to photograph the inscriptions, but the dying light and crumbling graves make beguiling images still. The sky is suffused with orange and mauve. The grass is long here and the tangled bushes spill out onto the pathway. I'm not sure which is the way back to the gate. There seems to be more to explore, so I move on, stopping and turning to take a picture or look towards the sound of something moving in the grass, probably a snake or a rat. It's getting cooler now, but I'm still sweating. I'm telling myself I'm not worried about being lost. Even so, I'm looking for a way out as the paths have become so narrow and overgrown, it's hard to move without stepping on a grave or into something with sharp thorns. Just ahead, there's something of a clearing. I walk into an open square where I can see almost dark sky properly again. Actually, in Calcutta, the sky is never completely dark because of the street lights that make the brown dust in the air glow. I can see the graves surrounding the square by this faint light. The gaps between them are filled with black shadow so that they seem to lean towards me from all sides. In the middle of the square, a path has been worn from one side to the other. It stretches between 2 waist-high headstones that glow pale white. I'm drawn to stand next to the nearest, and as I look down the path, I get a sense of looking down the batting strip of a cricket pitch. Smiling to myself, I put my camera and bag down beside me and take guard, standing sideways to the grave that makes my wicket and holding my imaginary cricket bat ready in front of my legs. I don't see the object that flies close past the back of my right hand, but I feel the whip of air. It's when I straighten up and make to step away from my gravestone wicket that I first sense the disapproval of the crowd. There is nothing I can hear but a distinct feeling I did hear them shifting and muttering at me. I crouch again over my bat, patting the bottom into the crease. I don't see anything this time either, but instinctively I flick the blade forward and twist it downwards. My arms are jarred by the force of the contact, a good solid hit through middle field. I start to run down the path, almost colliding with something running in the opposite direction, halfway. I'm panting by the time I stop in front of the other wicket gravestone. This is ridiculous. I shake my head, but again, I sense rather than hear the crowd at the other end of the path. A shadow is crouching in front of the wicket where I just ran from. I can see my bag and camera lying in the short grass in front of where first slip would be. I'd better go back and get them, but I can hear someone running behind me, a foot stamping down next to mine, a grunt of effort. The shadow opposite shifts and seems to dissolve as it starts towards me. In a panic, I run towards it, back down the path, another quick single. I can hear the crowd now, muttering, shifting behind the blackness between the graves. I take guard again. Four balls to go in this over, then I'll grab my bag and run. The next delivery pitches on my toes, crushing them in my light summer shoe, making me hop in pain. My eyes are watering, stinging from the salt sweat running from my brow. I square up again, squinting into the darkness. This time, the blow almost knocks my bat from my hands. Luckily, it's low again, and my loose grip on the bat means it doesn't fly up for a catch. Two balls to go. I hold the bat handle more firmly, tapping the bat into the crease to calm my nerves. At the last second, I sense the danger as the air pressure in front of my face increases, and I jerk my head violently back and to the side. There's a fierce fizzing sound and a sting as the seam rips past my cheek. Last ball. My shirt is sticking to my back. Under my arms, an icy trickle is running down my ribs. There's nothing to see in the darkness ahead of me except the faint glow of the headstone 22 yards away. Nothing to guide me how to react, how to protect myself. It takes a cricket ball, travelling at almost 100 miles an hour, less than a second to reach the batsman. The ball weighs 5.25 ounces, and at that speed delivers a force that breaks bones. I'm too slow. I realise the need to raise my bat, but I can't react in time. I've just started to move my arms when the pain in my chest crushes the breath out of me, bursting like a prize fighter's punch against my breastbone. I drop the bat and stagger backwards, stepping, already unconscious, onto my wicket. Out!